Hi, my name is Cassie Haynes. I'm 39 years old. I'm in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Jean is my colleague and friend and forever work bae.
Hi, I am Jean Friedman Rudofsky. I am 43 years old. I am in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And yeah, Cassie, you're my work bae, the one and only. Cassie, what is your first memory of me?
It was at Quinn's birthday party. I fully don't have, and we've talked about this before. Like, this is, the first time we really had a conversation. And I have to assume that I saw you at daycare pickup before Quinn's birthday because we'd already been living in Philadelphia at that point for a few months. But my first, like, actual memory of you is you standing in a packed party, like a packed 2-year-old's birthday party, and a lot of people who seemed grown and established, maybe some would call them older adults, for a 2-year-old birthday party. And this is the first time I also have memories of meeting all of your extended family who have also become my extended family. What's your first memory of me?
I think I remember you from before that party, only because, you guys were Mahalia was the new little kiddo in the small daycare where Quinn was. And so I remembered seeing Mahalia. And I think I saw, you and Emily kind of alternating pickups and drop-offs, but it was only, you would be coming off the porch and I would be walking onto the porch and we would sort of wave. And we somehow must have communicated because we invited you to Quinn's birthday party. So we must have had some sort of conversation or exchange of texts. And I remember, so I have some kind of images, I feel like, from those first, not sure I would even call them interactions, but from those first, quick hellos. And then I remember you guys coming to the party. And even though you didn't know many folks there, really, if any, seeming pretty kind of comfortable and at ease, chatting with people and just kind of being in that space. And then I remember you and I talked a little bit. And at that time, we were both working mainly from home and had somewhat flexible schedules, and that we weren't, working for other big companies or bosses. And so talked a little bit about meeting up sometime for to work from a coffee shop or something like that together.
We never did that. I don't think,
No,
did
never.
we?
We didn't. No, we didn't do that
No.
specifically.
We did other things together. It's I know it's funny because, like, I've heard you tell, origin stories of yourself, like, so many times in so many different, circumstances, because this is the nature of at least a part of the work that we've done together, how we've come to journalism, how we came to Resolve, how we came to, Philadelphia, or, kind of wanting to serve Philadelphians. I know that you didn't, like, start off wanting to be a journalist. It was a career that you kind of tripped into because of life experiences and, people in your life. What did you want to be? I, like, don't actually know, like, what you went to. I mean, I know what you studied, but, like, when you were a kid, like, what did you want to be when you were, starting at Wesleyan? Like, what were you like, this is what I see for myself?
I don't know, and not because I don't remember. It's because it was really unclear to me. It was really unclear to me. I will say, this is somewhat in the past tense. I will say I was never really good about thinking about goals and about kind of intentionally pointing my life in a specific direction. I think I tended to respond a lot to the things and circumstances around me. And I think I appreciate that in a number of ways because it has led me to where I am. And there is nothing that I would do that I would change because I would worry if I changed anything in the past, it would not lead me to this moment right now, which is absolutely where I want to be. I certainly thought about going into law, and I think that was what a lot of people assumed that I would go into, not just because of my dad being a prominent lawyer, but I think they, you know, saw like Jean could be a good lawyer. You know, she can speak well, she's smart, she knows how to argue. These are the things that maybe she would need. You know, I thought about just kind of doing organizing work full time. But I don't know, but something was pulling me back from sort of committing fully to that. I think I certainly thought at times about being a teacher or I don't know, when I was a lot younger, I wanted to be an artist when I was like 5 or 6 years old. That's what I remember talking about, like when I was in kindergarten, for example. But then, yeah, later in life, I really wasn't sure. And that's, you know, in part what led me to Bolivia and then kind of finding this space in the world through journalism, because I just genuinely didn't know. And I will say that I was bad about thinking about goals, and that I think that's something I really learned from you and how to be much more intentional about how I'm thinking about my future, that it's, you know, it is okay to kind of take what comes and figure out, you know, based on others' needs or what the world needs in any given moment. And also it is important to be kind of strategic and yeah, to set more and better goals and to be like thinking about the skills that I can build now that will take me into the future that I wanna have. So that is something that I definitely appreciate. And I think also, I'll say one more thing about this. I think, to be honest, the fact that I like entered college and didn't know exactly what I wanted to be was a source of, I didn't realize it at the time, but a source of some both anxiety and maybe a little bit of embarrassment, because I like, you know, I grew up with the image of success as my father's career, right? He like has a MacArthur Genius Award. Like, and that's what I thought success was, that you had to find one thing that you were really good at and then you did it for the rest of your life. And I didn't know what that one thing was. And I felt like I was supposed to, and I really didn't. And so I questioned whether I would ever really truly be as successful as I could if I hadn't found the one thing that I want to do for the rest of my life. And then of course I realized that that is not the only kind of professional success that you can have, but that was, yeah, like weighed heavy on me.
I love knowing that you wanted to be an artist, and this time a year ago, I would have had a piece of your artwork like readily accessible on some piece of paper somewhere on my desk. And I'm so sad that I can't just be like, oh yeah, look at this JFR original.
I know. Oh, man. What about you in terms of if you could go back, is there a piece of advice that you would give yourself, a younger version of yourself, whether that was in high school or college or later on?
I just know that I wouldn't have listened. I have enough, I think, self-awareness turning 40 in 2 weeks to like know that there, like all of the lessons that I have learned, I've learned at the age that I've been like ready to learn it. You know what I mean? And nothing about something I've learned in my late 30s would I have been in a position to hear in my early 20s and like really, you know, kind of take that. I think my parents never, so I was thinking about like what you said about not really knowing what you wanted to do. And so kind of taking experiences as they presented themselves, or, you know, as they were presented to you, like moving through them. And I think I was so locked on to, you know, what I thought I wanted or what I did want, you know, at a particular point in time, that like I would go hard in one direction and then realize that wasn't a direction that I wanted to necessarily continue to go in. I think that was a little bit challenging for my parents, who I think like your dad, you know, are of a generation where, especially if you've made a financial commitment in the form of, you know, loans or, you know, deep commitment to paying for expensive school, you know, you do the thing. And so graduating from law school and practicing for 6 months and then being like, this is not for me. You know, my parents had a hard time with it, but they took it in stride. And I think started to appreciate, as I started to appreciate, you know, okay, maybe it doesn't mean that I can do this thing and I can go deep into a learning space. And that can also be a thing that I don't continue to do for forever. I don't know. That was like really resonating with me, what you were saying. I still don't feel like I know, you know, it's not, I don't feel like I'm in a space that I'm gonna be in forever. And I think, you know, I would, if I knew all of that through college and through my 20s and, you know, my 30s, maybe I wouldn't have taken the risks that I took. Like maybe I wouldn't have made some of the choices that I've made. And again, like I wouldn't want to have ended up anywhere other than exactly where I have ended up. And, you know, building Resolve alongside of you, I think, there's not a single experience that wasn't, you know, educational experience or work experience or life experience that was gathered along the way that wasn't like poured into Resolve in some way. And I wouldn't have wanted to change any of that. But also I wouldn't have listened, so. So there's this question, what does being a solution leader mean to you? But do you feel like a solution leader? And then like, what does that mean to you? Cause I don't, or like, do you feel like a solution leader now? And, or did you feel like a solution? Like at what point? If you do feel like a solution leader, this is a multi-part question, Jean. If the answer is yes, I do feel like a solution leader. At what point did you start to feel like a solution leader? And like, what is it about? What was it about that time that made you feel like a solution leader? What thing happened that made you? What was the catalyst? There's a good word.
I think I do. I mean, I think that is not a label that I necessarily have thought about until now or would kind of like actively use that much, but I think it is accurate in the sense that I think Resolve has truly evolved to be an organization that is a solution to a lot of different things, but I think fundamentally the crisis of accurate and fully representative and responsive news and information in a lot of communities of Philadelphia, and being a model for how to I would say, serve information needs, and what I've been thinking about recently, like narrative needs of communities who have been long harmed by, yeah. And that, I think the kind of catalyst or turning point was you and I coming together in 2018 to really think about Resolve as something bigger than being a vehicle for a collaborative reporting project. Because I think, sure, that was a solution and innovated in and of itself. And also it was a little bit what I talked about earlier. It was sort of me being responsive to the situation that I was in, to a great suggestion and idea from someone else. And it wasn't, you know, I didn't go out and seek to put together a large-scale collaborative reporting project on reentry. I was in that position and I did it, but it wasn't like my goal. And then you and I came together, and that was the first time where it was really like, okay, what do we want to do? How do we be proactive about this situation that we are in? And I think we never stopped asking that question. The whole 5 years that you and I worked together, in the last, you know, 10 weeks or less since you haven't been with Resolve as co-executive director, we continue asking ourselves constantly that question. How do we be active, be forward thinking? How are we not just kind of responding to the moment and thinking about how do we build a better organization? How do we do work that is more impactful and that is always rooted in our values?
Yeah.
What about, I mean, you? I put the same question to you.
I think, I mean, for sure, I think, you know, Resolve is a solution leader. The individuals who are carrying out the work are solution leaders as humans. You know, I think you and I as individuals and as a team, you know, are solution leaders. I think one of the things that feels important to me about Resolve and about the way that I know you and I will always approach work, no matter what it is, no matter what space, no matter what geography, you know, and that's like doing things differently, questioning approaches, like looking at if you're not pushing boundaries, I think it's difficult to come up with solutions, particularly solutions that scale and are, you know, flexible and can respond to changing circumstances, because our world is changing so quickly, like so quickly. And so I think, you know, this, I don't know, this ability to kind of coexist alongside of changing communities with changing priorities and needs, and to, you know, be able to continue to like push the, you know, the envelope, I think, on behalf of particularly marginalized communities, I think is why I feel like the work that we have done together, the work that we will continue to do together, the work that you're continuing to do, you know, with Resolve is leading solutions, like, you know, just continuing to iterate, to, you know, check our own work, to look at our own processes, to, you know, ensure that our values continue to be aligned with the work that we're doing, with the processes that we're putting into place, all of that. You can't lead solutions. You can't, you know, without without really, I think, a strong commitment in that space. What are some challenges? There are loads. I think, you know, there's a lot to like, you know, be excited about and a lot of opportunities. I want to ask you about those too, but I also am like, you know, especially that, like, now that I am not there, you know, I'm like, what's up? I know some of the challenges too that I want to like specifically talk about, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think challenges at this point, I think a central challenge for this point for me is to, at this point for me, is to really kind of not just kind of fully step into, but also create some more processes around like genuinely taking off that co-founder hat, as we talked about, mm-hmm. and, you know, sitting more squarely in the executive director position. Because I think I can say that and I can, you know, kind of come mm-hmm. at things with that perspective. But if I'm not effectively transferring what that founder hat means to the board and to the staff, then I am by default still holding on to it, or no one has out, or no one has sort of the vision, you know, larger big picture vision of the organization in their mm-hmm. mind, which is also not a good thing. So I think, you know, and that is, it's not something that can happen instantly. It was not going to happen on June 2nd, like at that moment when you,
no.
on the first day that you are not the, you know, co-executive director. And also continues to be very top of mind. And I think presents a challenge also because it's not like there is a defined process that I can follow or like, oh, I just do this and this and this and everything and that like takes care of it. So I think that's a challenge that I continue to sit with. I think, you know, there are many parts of our working relationship that I miss. And I think some of it is just kind of, you know, having that constant accountability between the two of us of like, we just inevitably move things on because there were two of us. And so one person was asking the other, and then we had to make some follow-up tasks. And there's some things where it's like, just on me to like move forward. And so that's hard. That's hard. So that's from a, you know, kind of personal perspective. I think the challenges for Resolve, you know, in addition to continued financial sustainability, which is a challenge for, you know, anyone in this business, certainly in the nonprofit field, all of that, I think is really kind of living into, and this is the kind of reframing that you kind of sparked before you left of saying, well, what if we just got rid of initiatives and thought about our work and talked about our work a little bit differently? And the place that we're moving towards is really owning and seeing ourselves as a newsroom and of saying, we are actually like the local newsroom of the future. We are the newsroom that communities need moving into the future. And there's three core pillars of what a local newsroom in the future needs to be able to thrive and have community impact. It is to execute participatory and community responsive journalism, right? So that's documenters, it's Germantown Info Hub, right? It's reporters embedded in neighborhoods, it's the wire service, it's all of those things. Sorry, the work of our engagement team. It is a local newsroom thinking about how they're bridging information divides and doing more than just putting an article up on a website or printing it in a paper that you have to pay for, right? That's a text line. It's the, you know, free community newsletter. It's like thinking about the third spaces where we're distributing news and information. And then the third, of course, is collaboration. And that no local newsroom now or into the future should be operating in its own little silo or bubble, And of course, we do that in a very unique way, bringing almost 30 newsrooms together to work together on in-depth, collaborative, solutions-oriented reporting projects. And it doesn't have to be exactly that, but you have to be thinking really actively about collaboration. So I think this shift, and the reason I go to, and that we are kind of going towards newsroom, is I think I don't want to relinquish big J journalism to traditional journalism. I don't want to say we're civic media. I don't want to say we are, you know, participatory media. I don't know. I don't want to come up with these other names. I want to say that we are journalism, and everyone else needs to come along with us. And so I want to own that, like, we can be a newsroom too. It may look vastly different than the Inquirer and WHYY. And actually, maybe that's okay, not just okay, but like better into the future. And maybe it is that into the future, there's just as many community engagement staff as there are reporters. And there's just as many, you know, people thinking about distribution as there are who are producing the news and information. So anyway, all of that is still a challenge because we need to kind of, you know, walk into that. But that's what we're working with now. What do you think about
that? I love that. I love it. I think it makes so much sense. I'm so excited to hear that that's the direction. I also think that I think it will be helpful for staking modifiers claim in a space really specifically. There's a lot of organizations out there that are, you know, kind of putting on consultant hats in our industry. And I think I'm excited to talk to you more about this because I think that this is good for a lot of reasons. I'm excited to hear this.
Yeah, I was excited to tell you, and this is a great to be able to.
This is gonna, I think, clean it up so much, that external messaging.
What do you, as you are sort of moving forward in your career journey, you know, staying in this space and also doing different work, and I know that you are right now, you have, at least for right now, sort of chosen to not take on roles that would be similar to work like that you were doing with Resolve, be it, you know, as an executive director, for example, of a small news organization, a small nonprofit. In the work that you're going to be stepping into, what do you think will most kind of stick with you from the past 5 years? Like, what are the things that you feel like you're going to be kind of continuing to hold on to or practice, even if you have a job that is very different than the one that, you know, you and I carried out together?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much about, this is not, I wish that this was like, you know, fancier than it actually is. But the main thing is, honestly, it's the way that we approach our project management, the way that we approach our work, you know, the way that we organize our time. I have learned so much about how to be effective with my own time management, with supporting teams, with, you know, team-wide project management. And that's, it's so critical. It's so critical. And I think you and I have really, the two of us working through a lot of that together, I think is even allowed for more refinement and iteration than if it had just been, you know, me leading a team or what. I mean, our ability to kind of, to begin with, we have different brains, we have different working styles, we have different ways of engaging with information, of communicating with information. And so it's also made me a lot more attuned to, like, you know, looking at project management and time management and task management from other perspectives. So I know that that's, I mean, I could, there's also like a million things that are maybe more like poetic than project management, but it's just, that's just like the truth of it is that is a huge piece of it. I think, you know, how to listen, how to collaborate, how to work together. You know, this is all parts of, you know, not just how to, but like, it's better when. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just better when. It's not like, oh, how do I work with a, you know, a co-founder? How do I share leadership, or how do I build up, you know, leadership and then bringing these lessons with me? It's that, no, it's just like, it's better when it's like this. And so doing this from the beginning, you know, bringing people together who are coming together around shared work and shared interests and shared passions, but also shared values and what that means for the work then that you're able to carry out together. I all of that, I think, is, you know, I will for sure bring that with me into, you know, whatever comes next.
But I think that, I love that, because it's not, as you said, just project management. It is, I think, what was so, you know, unique about us working together and the way that we did, and about building Resolve in the way that we did, that it was always just as important how we carried out the work as it was what work we were doing in the world. And I think it was that equal balance of thinking really intentionally about how we're building the organization, who we're bringing in on staff, internal processes, all of that stuff that allowed us to truly, you know, grow and thrive. And that it is sort of, I feel like, a perfect thing for you to be taking on, or taking with you in your, you know, the next stage of your professional career, because it is genuinely what makes us, you know, unique. I mean, obviously the programmatic work that we do and the solutions that we are leading in the journalism field have a lot of merit in and of themselves, period. And also, I think what we have felt for a long time, and what we're even increasingly being recognized for from the outside, is that it isn't just about the impact of our work and of our, you know, programmatic work and the journalism and all of that. It is how we built the organization and the lessons that others are drawing from that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that that's a huge value proposition of Resolve's, and I think of ours as individual leaders, you know, like what we bring to the table in terms of our leadership. I want to know, I'm trying to frame this question a little bit differently than how it's written. But there's a lot, Philly's a really complicated city. There's so much beauty and creativity and innovation, and I love that about Philly. I miss Philly so much. And also, like, there are a lot of challenges, like deep, deep, deep challenges that, you know, I think the members of our team talk about on a regular basis. And it's part of how we, you know, we show up. It's, you know, we are members of the communities that we work within, that we live in. And sometimes things don't feel super hopeful. I think, you know, that's, there have been times over the last 5 years when being on staff at Resolve has been hard because of what we see, what we talk about, what we know. There's like a gift in, you know, kind of being tapped into what's happening in your community. And it also can be really painful. And it's, you know, also really painful when you're talking about a staff that exists in proximity to a lot of the excluded communities that we are really showing up to support. How are you continuing to not just, you know, kind of instill hope that things can change, you know, for the larger community, and like, I mean, through the work, how is Resolve continuing to bring people along with the mission? And also, how are you continuing to like take care of people on the team? It is hard. It's a constant priority for Resolve leadership and a constant challenge. And just especially in the context, like against the backdrop of a city that that has a lot of challenges.
Yeah. It's a great question. And, you know, I think about it a lot. And I think there's two answers to it. The first is that, you know, continuing to really walk the walk on our kind of internal policies and practices that let people, that give people the space to breathe, to take breaks, to process, to do what they need to continue doing the work. And just, you know, seeing so much team kind of investment for how folks watch out for themselves and for one another, right? There is just sort of like this continuing joke about how if you are on your day off and you show up in Slack, Jing Yao will come after you. Like, she's gonna come to you and find you and make you feel bad for not taking your day off and working. And so I think little things like that, it's a joke, but it's also not, right? It's like, no, we are very serious about the fact that people need to do what they need to do to keep themselves whole and you know, safe and happy and thriving and all of that. We just, I guess not last week, the week before, had, you know, one of our two biannual retreats. We had July retreat, and we led a yoga class for, you know, folks, and we all went bowling afterwards. So I think, you know, just little things like that. And then I think there is, you know, the broader and bigger picture of continuing to support staff and provide opportunities for, you know, reflection and processing above and beyond, you know, that being an individual responsibility, right? There's sort of like the individual side of it, of encouraging people to take the time that they need, and then offering opportunities for whether it's, you know, staff-wide conversations after something particularly traumatic happens in the city, or, you know, not obligatory staff-wide conversations, but like, all right, we're going to open up the Zoom room, and anyone who's just having a tough day today because this happened, come and hang out and chat about it, or just be, you know, amongst one another. So yeah, it's something that we're still really focused on.
Good.
Cassie, what are your dreams for us?
Oh my gosh, work-based forever. My dream is that we will work together again in some capacity, in some space, doing something. Building with you is the most fun. I've had professionally. It's been like the greatest experience ever. So my dreams are that we both do some things, you know, do some things that we want to do for a few years, and then we'll come back together and do some more great things.
I love
it. What are your dreams?
And sign me up. I'll co-sign.
Perfect.
Co-sign that dream.
I am really grateful that we have this opportunity. I mean, it's 40 minutes is not a lot of time to reflect on 5 years that have actually felt like a lifetime in the best way possible. But I'm happy that we got to, you know, talk about it, you know, a little piece of it.
Me too. Me too.